What is up, people? I'm Garrett Johnson, and you're listening to Consider Before Consuming, a podcast by Fight the New Drug. On this episode, we sit down with Chrissy Outlaw. Chrissy is a strong individual. She's been through a lot in her life. One thing that she experienced at a very young age that no child should have to experience was sexual abuse. Chrissy's experience with childhood sexual abuse reinforces a stat that we found published on the U.S. National Library of Medicine website, which states that 66 to 90% of women in the sex industry were sexually abused as a child. We've included a link with this episode showing that study. During our conversation, we also talk about how pornography perpetuated false expectations in her life, the average duration required to film a scene in her experience, some of the coercion that she experienced while in the industry, why she decided to transition out after 7 years, and what she's up to today. We hope you enjoy this episode of Consider Before Consuming. We feel fortunate to sit down with you, and I guess, can you introduce yourself first of all?
I am Chrissy Outlaw. I was in porn, in the porn industry for 7 years. I got out in 2006, and it was because of my faith. I quit. I didn't go back. I didn't take any more money. I had a website that made a lot of money, and I just told them to keep the money, and God took care of me, and he put people in my life all along the way to help me get my first job and all that kind of stuff.
So you were in it for 7 years, and if you don't mind me asking, how did you end up in that industry? Was it a sudden decision or something that transpired over a period of time?
It was a period of time and a bunch of circumstances. So as a child, I was sexually abused, which is very common for sex workers. I do work with women who've come out of the industry now, and I don't know anybody who wasn't sexually abused as a child.
How many, if you just had to put a rough estimate, how many women do you know when you say that none of them weren't abused?
I have...
About how many?
When I worked at Treasures, I probably had talked to, mentored maybe 20 women.
Okay.
And then now on my own, I've... In Houston, we have a large amount of women who come out and then go back in. So with that, I would say hundreds of ladies that I've worked with.
And all of them
have been sexually abused. Yeah, as a child. I don't know any that haven't. I was sexually abused when I was only 4 years old. And then after that, it just seemed to be like a pattern. Different people, different situations. And I felt like I felt like something was wrong with me. Like, how do I keep drawing these people to me? I thought it was something I was doing. My dad was very religious, and he said that he taught me to be a virgin until you get married. But he was also an alcoholic, so he had rages. He wasn't a good example, of what a father should be. He was abusive to my mom, but he also would preach the Bible. He would go to churches. I mean, not churches. He would go to bars and drunk and get in fights because he's sharing his faith. So if that gives you an idea.
It's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. So so growing up, he said if anybody ever touched me, that he would kill them.
So just kind of shutting off the line of communication.
Yes.
A little bit, right?
Don't ever do that if you're listening to this. If I would have felt like he would have a conversation or cared, how I was feeling, then maybe I would have said something. But instead, I was terrified when it first happened. And I think that's why eventually I thought something was wrong with me, because I keep attracting those people. And, as a child, when you're sexually abused, for me personally, I shut down. I wasn't inside of my body. It felt like it was happening to somebody else. And I think that that's how I coped with it. And then, you know, it's the same thing when I got in the sex industry. I learned the same techniques to cope with all of the sexual abuse or being in the industry.
So you've helped a lot of people, mm-hmm. right? And fast forwarding to today, from the time when you were young and then going through the sex industry, did you ever think that you would be helping, maybe in the middle of your 7 years, mm-hmm. at that middle point, did you ever think that you'd be helping other people?
No. I thought I would be dead before I was 40 years old. Actually, before I was 30.
We kind of laugh about that. Like, as you said that, you kind of mm-hmm. chuckled, but was that a sincere thought?
Mm-hmm. I was very suicidal. I had tried to kill myself many times. I didn't think that my life was, like, worth living. I think, you know, part of when I was in the industry, part of it was because I didn't feel loved. And then these people gave me attention. They thought I was pretty, you know, things like that. That
created, like, a false connection.
Yes, a false sense of love. So I didn't have I didn't feel a lot of love around me growing up. And then whenever I started talking to different photographers, I was actually working in an office at the time when I got into porn. I never thought that I would go into the porn industry. I hated it. I didn't want to. I guess the first time I saw it, I was a teenager, and I was living with my dad. Because my parents split up, and he kind of took off with us, my brother and I, and took us away from our mom and moved us to another city. And so that's the first time I saw porn. Is it was under somebody's dad's bed.
So it was a magazine or?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious because it's changed so much.
Yeah. There was no internet.
Yeah.
Back then. I was around before the internet.
So was I. So. That's okay.
So I remember.
What was your first experience like with it?
Yeah, I remember looking at it, and it was like interesting to me because I've never seen an adult woman, how they look or any of that stuff. So it was interesting, and then I thought they were beautiful, and I don't know. I was just kind of, I don't know. It was like it's a secret because it's hidden.
That's one of the interesting things about pornography, because a lot of people aren't having meaningful conversations about it.
Mm-hmm.
So then when a person is first exposed to pornography, they don't know what to think. But inherently, inside of all of us, that can be attractive. And mm-hmm. so you said you found this attractive, but then you were kind of curious and it was a secret.
Yeah, it was a secret. It was under his bed. And I don't know. It created curiosity. Like, what is this? And I don't know. I was just kind of drawn by it. But at the same time, I knew it was something I shouldn't be looking at. So I didn't do it again. But even if I think back, I can picture what the woman that I was looking at looks like still. And yet, like, porn was something I never thought I would do. I was engaged when I was 21 and moved in with my fiance. And he brought porn into the house, and I kept throwing it away. And then he would get mad at me, and then he would bring it in again. And so after a while, I started questioning, like, I don't have what he wants. I'm not enough. And so from there, I don't know, my feelings start changing for him because he wasn't making me feel like he valued me. And so my feelings for him kind of totally changed. Like, I stopped being in love with him. And so I had cosmetic surgery. And before we broke up, and then it wasn't long after that I left him. And I said, one day I'm going to be one of those girls. And I didn't really believe it at the time.
When you say you said that, mm-hmm. you said that to him or just in your mind?
No, I said it to him. I said, one day I'm going to be one of those girls. And I really didn't. I didn't believe it. I didn't want to be. I guess it was just some kind of weird revenge thing at the moment. But it's just crazy because just a few years later, I mean, several years later, I did become that girl. Never thought I would. I think, you know, the stuff that I was exposed to after I broke up with him, or actually, even before I lived with him, my parents kicked me out when I was 18 after I graduated. I moved in with my first boyfriend. He also watched porn. So this was prior to that. And he had like stations on the TV that he would watch. So I kind of,
That exposure where almost guy after guy was looking at how to challenge pornography.
Yeah. And then, you know, I was very influenced by music. I was very influenced by radio talk shows, you know, hey, we have the Hooters girls here today, stuff like that. Or,
and you saw, when you say that, was it like you saw them getting attention or
it was like a radio station.
Yeah. Okay.
And you would hear them all like laughing and the men clapping for them. And so all of this stuff is in my head all the time. And I'm thinking,
you're like, this is what guys want.
This is what guys want. And they can't control it. It's just how they're born.
It's a biological urge and it should be satisfied.
Yeah. Basically. And that's what that's what people told me.
One thing I wanted to mention is you mentioned the cosmetic surgery. And I just wanted to ask, in your opinion, if you feel like porn perpetuated a false expectation for yourself. And was that a driver for the cosmetic surgery or not?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I didn't go enormous, but I didn't feel adequate.
And I just want to point that out because there's a lot of science and research showing that pornography perpetuates false expectations for both genders.
Oh, yeah. And after that relationship, after I was engaged, I went to another one. I like went somewhere every year or 2 years and lived with somebody new. All of them looked at porn. Eventually, I just started dating guys who are already in the industry, either like a photographer, you know, a pornographer, or somebody who was talent. They weren't much different from the men I was already dating. It was kind of like, at some point being in porn, you realize that you can only kind of be with people who are in porn because nobody else will understand it. Even though I always had the hope that somebody would say, Christy, you don't have to do that. Let's get you to start doing this or that. But even, you know, part of me going into the industry was a lack of love. And even back then, all I really wanted was my mom to say, you're better than that.
You wanted true connection and love. And
If she would have said, Christy, you're better than that, you don't have to do this, and, you know, built me up, I wouldn't have gotten into that so easily. But I didn't grow up with encouragement. That was something that never happened. If anything, it was, why can't you be more like your friend Leanne, or why can't you be more than like this person? People whose personalities aren't even like mine. Outgoing, you know, I was not an outgoing person. I was very shy. So, you know, I never felt adequate to, you know, a lot of people. I think that the only place I was getting love and encouragement was from people who were in the industry who were trying to build me up so that I would fulfill whatever they wanted me to do. So how did I, you know, do it? Like, I mean, the first time that I did a shoot, it was in a hotel with a photographer I've never met, one light. And it was like I said, I never wanted to be in the industry. But this was a great photographer. But so we got in the hotel and he started shooting, and then he's like, okay, I need you to take off this. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here doing this. I started shaking. I was scared, you know, but you know,
a little bit of backstory, if you don't mind me. So how did you get there?
Well, the way that I met him online, I had posted bathing suit pictures somewhere. This is after I left the fiance. It took me a long time to say yes to somebody to shoot something, but I was also on dating websites because I didn't know how to meet men. I didn't go anywhere. I was an isolated person. So all of these online ways, people start contacting me to do porn.
And then, would be direct with it? Like, they're like, we want you to do pornography, or was it modeling?
Sometimes they would say modeling, but other times they would be like, can you do topless or can you do full nude? But we're not going to show, you know, that. Okay. So the photographer, what happened is I went through a lot of bad relationships. I mean, I was like a serial dater. I always had to have a man in my life, or I felt like my life is useless. so sad.
Well, no, I mean, I think a lot of our listeners can probably relate to that. And that's why we're so grateful that you're sharing your experience and have shared your experience for so long. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's something we all need, meaningful relationships. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there's just too many people that are experiencing abuse and mm-hmm. sexual abuse, and then they don't have that meaningful relationships, and so we chase for it in other ways.
Yeah.
Whether it's, like you were saying, boyfriend after boyfriend, or whether it's connection with food or whatever it is, mm-hmm. it's like we're finding these false connections. Yeah. And so I think we can relate to that. So yeah. You're going boyfriend after boyfriend, you were saying?
Yeah. I always had to be with somebody. I mean, I was kicked out when I was 18 after I graduated high school. My mom and stepdad said I need to find somewhere to live. I have until October. And so I found somewhere to live with a boy. And then that just started the pattern.
I kind of interrupted you on the, you mentioned that you started shaking your first time.
Yeah.
In that first, you were kind of hesitant to shoot with someone, and then you took that leap. And
well, the photographer that I said yes to, was a really good photographer as far as like the quality of the photos and the caliber of the women he was shooting. So I thought, he's talking to me about it. Maybe I'm as good as they are. So I had just had another breakup, and I was like in a very bad place. But I had this photographer saying, you know, I'll shoot you and we'll try to get your pictures in Playboy. Because he submits to them and he has gotten people published before. So I was like, okay, but let's just do, you know, boundary. I had not full nude.
So you went into this knowing not full nude?
Mm-hmm. I said, well, we can do like bathing suit or maybe like topless, but that's as much as I'll do. But yeah, the first time I was, I was there, I can just like, it's very strange though. My experience, I know what happened, but I didn't feel like I was inside, like I dissociated. I can see myself from the photographer's view looking down at myself instead of like really being in my head. I don't know.
Dissociation can be a coping mechanism. With all the people you've helped over the years, do you see that as a common coping mechanism?
It is. There's a lot of different coping mechanisms. Some turn to alcohol or drugs or pills. Or for me, I dissociated. I learned that when I was a kid and that it worked. And so removing pieces of clothing and feeling like I'm inside of my body was too hard.
It's too challenging.
Too challenging. So I had to disconnect. I couldn't do it any other way. And I was shaking and I was standing there and I'm like thinking, what am I doing? And then I'm like, okay, he's shooting me for Playboy. So I need to like just do my best job. But then when I think of it, I think of myself looking down at myself. It's like it didn't happen to me in some ways.
I think one thing that a lot of our listeners and people who have a challenge with pornography, I think one of the common justifications mm-hmm. is that porn, I only watch porn that's consensual. Mm-hmm. Or the girl or guy who I watch, they wanted to be there.
Right.
And I just wanted to ask you, because we've talked about dissociation a lot. Did you appear to want to be there in the photographs and or video?
Yeah. I was.
So
I
to
loved,
the viewer, you wanted to be
yeah.
there.
Yeah. In some ways, I did what I did. I'm not saying porn, but the part that there was a part that liked some of the things I liked to be glamorous. I loved that I could go somewhere and they would do my hair and then my makeup and they would have wardrobe and all the stuff. I'm this girl that doesn't feel loved and all of these things. And then we would start the shoot and they would put a fan on or whatever, just start it off. And then when I start taking stuff off is when I have to check out. But there is something about being glamorous, and I think that the porn industry sells that fantasy like that.
And I just wanted to point that out because a lot of porn, it may look consensual, mm-hmm. and it may look like this female or male are having the mm-hmm. time of their lives and that they're in a perfect state. But it's like, in your experience, that wasn't the case.
Mm-mm. No, I wasn't myself. I wasn't myself when I was doing those things. I couldn't be. So, yeah.
If you can, So from the first time that you reached out to be photographed by this very good photographer, and how did it progress from there? Was it easier to do it the second time?
Well, we shot two different days. Actually, I had no regard for my own life. I stayed in a hotel with him, a complete stranger overnight. Like, this wasn't a new behavior for me. I have done that in my dating life. But I stayed in the hotel with him. Nothing happened between us. But
it's just kind of high risk behavior.
Yeah, right? Very high risk. And actually, I didn't care if something would happen to me. Like, nobody else cared. But so day two of shooting, we shot in a different area where we're on the beach and there's sand dunes, and we were like in this little section where nobody could see us. And he started pushing my boundaries, and I let him push me into doing other things that I didn't want to do.
My question for you is, and I think I might have asked you, but I don't remember if you clarified, was, did you sign a contract saying I'll do this, this, and this, but I won't do this, this, and this? And then he was trying to push boundaries, or was there no contract, just a kind of a verbal agreement?
No, I mean, we had a verbal agreement. But part of me was like, well, I already did these things. Is it really a big deal? But after the shoot, when he sent me the pictures and I saw myself in those positions in different parts of my body that I've never seen before up close, it was terrifying. I mean, I told myself, oh my gosh, I'm never going to do this again. I'm going to throw all these pictures away and never, ever, ever do this. This is too far. So after that was my first shoot ever, 2 days. And then after that, I mean, I was still working in an office, so I would go back to my normal life. And back then, the internet just started. So after I would be done with my work, I would be online.
It was about mid-90s or so?
It was, yes.
Mid-90s, okay.
And so I would go back to my job. I was very good at my job. I would get all my work done, and I would be bored. And so I would get on the internet, and, you know, the older women, there was like really older women in their 60s, and they hated me. So they got me in trouble for being on the internet.
They didn't know what it was. They're like, what is this thing?
Yeah, they were haters.
That's funny.
Like, why is she on the internet? We better go tell on her. But I was one of the younger people in the office, but also one of the, I was in line to be the next office manager.
You were doing your work. You were productive.
Yeah, I was doing everything. Yeah, I could have been the office manager, but I think if I wasn't searching for somebody to love me, my life would have turned out way different, for sure.
And so from there, you said you were never going to do it again the first shoot.
Oh, yeah. So I think maybe 6 months later or so, I took another shoot. And then this shoot was in Los Angeles, and they're going to pay me a lot of money. And at this point, I hadn't worked with men. The first shoot, there was no men. This shoot was just me. And
the first photographer wasn't a man?
Oh, he was a man.
Oh, okay.
He didn't shoot me with a man.
Multiple people. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
It was just me by myself. And so this shoot would also be me by myself. I would go, I would shoot for 3 or 4 days, and they would fly me to L.A., and I saw their pictures. They shoot in these big mansions, and it was just so glamorous. So I'm like, okay, might as well. Like, this person just broke my heart. I don't have anything worth living for. And so I took my shoot in L.A., and the pictures were beautiful. I did the same things I did in the first shoot at this shoot. And the second day that I shot with them, they introduced me to this guy who was a manager. And so he wanted to sign me up, but I wasn't sure. But I ended up signing up with him, but not right away. And so he would book me to do shoots, and he would get 25%. I kind of decided to go with him because I heard so many horror stories from about other managers. And this manager was one of the legit ones. Like, he was somebody who, you know, kind of, he didn't want his girls to get hurt. He was very, he would scout out, you know, different.
Making sure that the other talent, I guess, other actors or actresses were going to be stuff that fell in your would do list, like okay list.
Kind of. Exactly. Yeah.
He did his part to investigate.
Mm-hmm. He did his best. He was a very nice person. I mean, I know a lot of people have a different experience. This is what mine was. He was a nice man to me at the time. I mean, looking back, I can see where I was coerced into doing things.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention, you mentioned the word coerced, uh-huh. and we talk about the harmful effects of pornography. We also talk about sexual exploitation mm-hmm. and how pornography's inseparably connected to sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you now see how there was coercion there.
Yes.
I'm asking the same question again. In this instance, mm-hmm. did you sign like, I will do this, I will do this, I will not do this, I will not do this in your contract?
I don't remember. I don't think it was that specific. I do know that they say that they can take the pictures, redistribute them, reuse them for forever,
okay.
sell them to other people. I don't remember if we had a checklist of what I would do, but I can tell you on my manager's website, there was a list of what I would do and what I wouldn't do. And I wouldn't work with men. I mean, that came later. But in the beginning, it was very tame.
Did you ever show up to a gig and your manager said, look, like, I know you don't want to do this, but if you don't do it, we don't get paid? Did that ever happen or
no,
insinuation of that?
His tactics were way different.
How
he came across as a nice guy. Like, Chrissy, if you don't want to do that, you know, I won't book you for that. So, I mean, I thought that he cared about my well-being. And the girls that he booked, he wasn't one of those managers that has everybody. He doesn't book everybody. He was very particular with what the girl looks like and all that. And the girls that he booked did less than I do, most of them, or that I did.
So was there a point that you felt like he crossed the line? Or that he...
Well, this is what happened. There was... for example, there was one shoot that I did. And it was just like... It was one of those shoots that's not glamorous. And so I usually didn't take those shoots because I had control. That's not how it is now. But back then, I could say no to something and no problem. But this shoot was for a big company, but their kind of porn, it was solo girl porn, but their kind of porn, their company was, you know, everybody wanted to work with them because it's going to look good for them. It's going to be shot. Well, it was kind of, it wasn't really glamorous. It was just like, well, it was just a guy with a camera, recording me. Video. So I got to that shoot and I was by myself, and then he started asking me if he could touch me and do other things with me. And I felt very vulnerable. And he's like, I'll pay you more money. And I let him do it. I didn't know how to say no. And so I let him do those things. And then when I left that shoot, I told my manager, I'm like, I will never, ever shoot with them again. And I didn't. So I think my manager may have booked me with this person that he works with all the time to test my boundaries. And because I found out later that there are girls that work with this man one-on-one and they do those things. So I think it was a test. To see
a strategy.
Mm-hmm. Very clever, right? I told my manager I will never shoot with him again. That was not okay.
And was your manager present for that shoot?
It was just me and the photographer. Usually there's a person that does a microphone or does lighting or something like that. This was just a camcorder and a guy. And, you know... It wasn't even the same quality of the stuff that he usually shoots. So I think it was a setup to see what I would do, what I would let him do. And if my, and for my manager to find out if he could book me for things like that going forward.
And did you talk to your manager about it? You said, mm-hmm. we're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah. And he was like, I can't believe he did that. But, you know, later, years later, I found out that many of the girls, we had several girls from Czechoslovakia that would come to the U.S. And some of those girls would do shoots like that.
Have similar experiences.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So did you continue with this manager throughout your entire time in pornography? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I stuck with him. I mean, at the time I felt like he was the best one.
Sounds like he did a good job in the sense of he was strategic.
Yes.
Very calculated, it sounds mm-hmm. like.
Yeah.
So I can understand why you thought that.
And one time I had a breakup with a boyfriend and I was living in Las Vegas for 3.5 years when I was in the industry. Out of the 7, I lived with an abusive man. And we actually worked together doing porn. But I had broken up with him. My manager said, you can just come stay with me. And yeah, he pushed the boundaries too.
The manager?
Personal.
Same manager that we talked about?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
he pushed the boundaries. Things happened that I didn't want to happen.
Did you experience drug and alcohol use to cope with your child?
That's very common, and most women do. Most of the girls do that to get through the scene. And they dissociate. There was a time when I started using drugs, and the people that I shot with were people I was getting high with, and it was with my boyfriend was the photographer. So there was sporadical drug use. I never got addicted to any drugs, thank God. I don't know. I know.
How can they appear? Sorry, I interrupted.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say. How can that happen? How can someone be under the influence of drugs and alcohol and dissociation mm-hmm. and still appear to be enjoying the scene?
Well, I think they look at it as a job. And so while they know, they kind of know what needs to be done. Well, another thing too is that, like for me, if I wasn't making the right kind of noises, if I wasn't making contact with the camera, they would tell you what to do. So they tell you as you're shooting.
Did they ever use pornography to show you what you should perform like or sound
no.
like?
No.
Okay.
No. And I really didn't watch it.
Okay.
Either. So I don't know. I was kind of, I guess, different from a lot of the girls because I didn't know what I was doing. I was shy. So I would be like, okay, tell me what words and I'll say it. So as they're shooting, they cut it. So you see only the parts that they want you to see, the part that's appealing.
So we look at, I don't know in your circumstance, but let's say the average, let's say there's a video that's 30 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think it took to shoot that video?
It can easily take 2 hours. And if you're working with somebody else, if you're working with the guy and there's issues, he's having issues, it can take a lot longer. And so I remember being on
set. When you say having issues, just to be medically correct, it's just maintaining an erection.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I just wanted to be clear about that because we talked about the false expectations that the porn industry perpetuates.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of them for men.
Yeah.
It's like we see this 30-minute scene and we think that it was just one scene and it was true intimacy. But as we're learning.
No. As a matter of fact, the one shoot that I'm thinking of, we couldn't get the money shot. That's what they call it. After like 3 hours, maybe 4 hours of trying to shoot the scene, but he couldn't perform. He couldn't finish. He couldn't do the money shot. So we had to go back the next day and finish it. And I was working with my abusive.
That took 2 days.
Yeah. I was working with my abusive boyfriend. I've had videos where I start crying sometimes. We didn't do anything that they do today, but, you know, I had certain boundaries. I hate to say I had boundaries because they really weren't. They were things I thought would keep me safe. But they didn't because people would manipulate me.
One thing I wanted to mention was I just listened to a podcast recently, and this particular podcast, I won't mention which podcast it was, but the person was investigating the porn industry, and he talked to someone who was a, who used to be a producer. Mm-hmm. And the producer said that porn hasn't changed much. This person was from the 90s and early 2000s, kind of before internet came along and really changed the porn industry. But in this podcast, this producer said that porn has always been aggressive and violent. But you just said that you said, I think if I'm going to quote you almost correctly, you said, we never did any of the stuff that they're doing today.
No, we didn't.
So in your experience, pornography has changed.
Yeah. I mean, I was never really on sets with where there were other men on set. As part of like, I didn't want to be around porn star guys. But the time, I mean, there was a few times where it happened, and then I would tell my manager, don't book me. And
when you say it happened, like violent or aggressive, or
no, just that, that
just things that were against you.
Yeah. Things that I didn't feel comfortable with. I didn't want, so there was a one shoot in particular, we're shooting a scene that's a giant house on that's a marble spiral staircase. And there were other men preparing for their scene that was coming later, watching me with my boyfriend.
Okay.
And I don't know. It just, I was so uncomfortable. And then my boyfriend was having issues that time too. And then he got mad at me. And
it's
then
this weird cycle of like, they need pornography to perform. Mm-hmm. And then they're making pornography, which is causing
erectile dysfunction.
Yeah. So it's like they're producing something that creates a problem, and then they're using the something to fix the problem, and it's this vicious cycle.
Yeah. And then if they use some kind of drugs, then that can cause, you know, them not to be able to finish the shot too. So, but yeah.
I think the whole point of the reason why I started asking these questions is because everything is calculated in pornography.
Yeah. And you know, my boyfriend, the two times that I just spoke about who couldn't finish the shot, I'm the one who got blamed. He was mad at me. He beat me up, you know, afterwards. That was my fault. It was my fault that these guys were standing around doing their thing to get prepared for their scene, looking down at us. It was my fault. So
there was physical.
So, yeah, just saying like what you see isn't always what's going on.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's very true. If you can, so what made you leave the industry?
Well, you know, I grew up as, you know, more conservative. When I was a little girl, I felt connected to God. And I mean, I believed with all my heart. There was no doubt that God existed. But then life happened. And as I got older, the childhood faith that I had, I didn't know how that transitioned into adulthood. And then, you know, my parents split up and I had an abortion. My mom took me to get an abortion. There's like so many things that happened in life that I didn't know. I would thought God didn't exist anymore. I got to that point. I mean, it took me a while to get there, but, you know, and then going into the industry, I'm like, I don't know. I just felt like, where is God in all this? And why would he let these things happen to me? Why are people, you know, sexually abusing me? I mean, and even the relationship that was abusive, I could have left, but I didn't want to be by myself. It's
and
really sad.
The thing is like when it comes to health, we have all these different aspects of health, mental and emotional and social and physical and financial. There's so many, and every relationship is so complex. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it's easy for you to look back and be like, oh, I could have left.
Yeah.
But
you know what? This guy, he knew what he was doing. He was taking all my, he was basically a pimp, to be honest with you. He took all of my money. I never saved anything. He took it. He also had worked in porn previously. Different kind of porn, and it was kind of known in that genre. So
we're just grateful that you are doing so much good by sharing your experience. We honestly are grateful because a lot of people don't get to hear this experience, a firsthand experience of what it's like to be in the industry. And you've mentioned so many amazing, I mean, I shouldn't say amazing because they're challenging experiences, but they're your experiences. And I just admire that you're doing so much good with those experiences.
Thank you. I figured it was a big part of my life. If I can't use it for something good, then it was a waste.
That makes sense. You were kind of mentioning how you left the industry. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to that a little bit more? Yeah.
So, I had a childhood phase, and then everything went wrong. The last guy that I dated while I was in the industry, we didn't work together like the boyfriend before. And I think we started dating right after, like a year after that abusive relationship was over. So this guy, he was a mainstream movie, not like porn, movie star. He's not really a star.
He's an actor.
That's the word.
Did mainstream stuff.
Yes. He was a stuntman, actor, photographer. He did everything because in LA, that's what you have to do. You can't just be an actor.
Yeah. You got to do anything they ask. Run for coffee or whatever it is.
Yeah. So he seemed very normal. We were together for a year. He had a son. So I always wanted to be a mom. And I liked that, even though it took his kid a long time to tell me he loved me. But, it was like an instant family. And he was nice. And he wasn't abusing me. But I always thought this guy was the guy who was going to rescue me. He's going to tell me, Chrissy, we don't need to do this. Like, why don't we do this or that together? And that didn't happen. He actually started shooting the stuff for my websites. He became a part of it. And when he couldn't, we lived together. But when he couldn't make his bills, I would reach out to other people who need a photographer and get him some, business with these other, what am I trying to say?
You just make connections?
Yeah, I would connect him with people networking. Who would hire him to be a photographer. And that was horrible. I mean, it's the worst feeling when you've worked for 7 years to become everything that a man would want in the hope of gaining love. And then when he starts shooting other women, his friends would come over and they would go in the office and he would show him all of these pictures of these beautiful women. It's not just photos of me. It's of these other women. I knew he was attracted. And so, we were together all the time. I knew if I was with him, he wasn't going to mess up and do something because I'm there. And we literally every day we would go out to eat breakfast, then we would go hiking, then we would go to the dog park. Like we had our routines. But there was right before we broke up, and the reason why we broke up, he had gone out of town without me to work on a film, mainstream film, not porn. And he called me one night really, really late, and I heard music in the background, and I knew he was at a strip club. He denied it. He was drunk. He denied it. Said, no, I'm at P.F. Chang's and it's like 2:00 in the morning. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I didn't believe it. But it created this feeling inside me of
betrayal trauma, right?
Yeah.
I'm not putting words in your mouth.
No, it did. I felt, because even before he left, I said, don't go to a strip club. Like, that's just so random. But I did. And that's what he did. And I just felt that it was like as if he cheated on me, and he lied about it. He even lied on his son's life. So I knew though that night, I just like kind of hung up the phone, sat on the kitchen floor crying, and that's when I what changed my life. I prayed to God and I said, if you're real, I need to know, like everything I know about love is twisted and perverted. And I don't think I've ever been loved before. And then the next day, my boyfriend admitted that he did go to strip club. And I know it sounds silly because I was doing porn. So I guess in some ways I can relate to those women who don't look at porn and don't want their husbands looking at porn or boyfriends or whatever. I can totally relate to that because I was hurt. Even when I was in the industry, I was still that woman. I did not like it. So you know, he, I felt like he betrayed me. I felt like he cheated on me. So the next day I had said this prayer. Well, you know what? So what I realized in the moment before, when I hung up the phone, before I started praying, is that even though I had worked so hard to be that girl in quotes, I still wasn't enough for a man that I thought I was going to marry. And that was devastating to me because, you know,
it kind of came full circle, because at the very beginning of our conversation, you talked about how you left your boyfriend because he was looking at pornography and it created some false expectations for you. And you're like, I'm going to become one of these women. And then you became that. And then you still felt like you weren't.
And it still wasn't enough to keep somebody, you know, just into me. It was terrible. Like I was the fantasy that they were looking for. So why am I not enough? I couldn't understand it. I was one of the most more popular people at that time, and I still wasn't enough for him. He still wanted to go look at other people. He still wanted to go to strip club. And it was devastating to me, you know, becoming the fantasy that I thought I needed to be and still not being enough.
So what happened after that?
So what happened, I went to where he was shooting. It was in a different state, so I had to travel there. And when I got there, the guy who was the producer's son, we had dinner with him, and he's like, "So, like, Chrissy, I don't know what your problem is. Why is it not okay? You're working in porn. Why can't he go look at other women? You know, sometimes a guy doesn't want a brunette; they want a blonde, or they want, you know, these different ethnicities." And
he's just talking objectification.
Yeah.
He's like,
exactly. I'm like, my blood was boiling. I was so mad, and I'm shy, but when I have something to say, I will say it. You know, and this man's married. He has like 4 kids, and I'm thinking he's cheating on his wife, and he doesn't see anything wrong with it. He's trying to convince me. And so,
well, one of the things that happens when in pornography is objectification, and it takes a person from a person with thoughts, mm-hmm. feelings, and emotions to a commodity. Mm-hmm. So it's like he was kind of talking to you like, maybe we don't want this or this, but we want this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like just a commodity. It's like, I don't want a blue shirt or a red shirt. I want a green.
Yeah. And maybe one day he might want something totally opposite. So he couldn't understand either how a porn star can be complaining about her boyfriend going to the strip club, which I know people don't get that. But I think it just goes back to my beliefs, you know, growing up, and how my ideal relationship wouldn't be like that. As a matter of fact, I thought the guy would save me.
And one thing that's common, and you probably know this because of how many people you've helped, mm-hmm. with their challenges, is attachment disorder, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's kind of what you were missing, is like this true meaningful connection, true meaningful relationships in your life, and you're kind of chasing that forever.
And I was always in these relationships where I might live with them, we might shoot together, but I wasn't totally connected. Like I'm married now. I have never connected with any of these men. How many men? I don't even know. I've lived with so many. Never connected to them like I do my husband.
So there was sex, but zero intimacy, it sounds like, right? Like not true, physical, meaningful relationships.
Yeah.
Well, how did you get to that point? Because that's a hopeful story.
Yeah.
The fact that you came from that and then you have all these.
Yeah. So I went to the where he was shooting. We had that little argument. We had a fight, a really bad argument, me and the director's son. I made him really mad. He kicked us out of the room.
Good for you.
And I'm like the shy one, but I couldn't. I was so angry that, you know, whenever I get angry, sometimes it just, I can't control what I say.
Yeah.
So my boyfriend was really mad at me. Like, you're going to get me kicked off of this project. I'm like, I don't care. You need to go home anyway. where was I going with that? What happened? So one day, he introduced me to everybody on the set. He's like, come on to the set with me. And so I went there with him, and he introduced me to people. And, you know, we hung out. It was mostly guys on the set. I don't remember seeing any women, but there was a moment when he was being shot. And one of the guys he introduced me to started talking to me, and he's like, "So, Christy, what do you do for a living?" And that's not something I talked about in real life. So I was just like, "Oh, I'm a model." And he's like, "Well, what kind of model?" I was just like, "Oh, you know, like men's catalogs and car magazines." And I could tell that he wasn't quite believing me because he kept, you know, "What else? What else?"
Kept digging.
Yeah.
Like he was looking for a specific answer, yes, maybe?
He was. And I started realizing that he wanted, you know, he knew something. So, and like I said, we didn't tell people in our real life, except for my boyfriend's, you know, a handful of friends that he would email photos to. So eventually I just said, "Oh, I do porn." And he's like, "Chrissy, like, I already knew that." He said, "Before you even got here," and this was humiliating to me because we didn't share this. He said, "Before you even got here, your boyfriend has been talking about you and showing your pictures to everybody." And it was weird because even though I'd been naked before, I felt so much more exposed at that moment, knowing everybody has seen, you know, everything on me, about me. And that my boyfriend is treating me like he doesn't really love me. Because what my ideal of what love was, wasn't that. My idea, you know, when the right guy comes along, is that he won't look at my porn. He won't have any interest in it. And so, you know, so I knew too, it was validation that, yeah, he's not going to be your husband. And so I felt humiliated. And he said, "You know, Chrissy, you know, you don't have to live that kind of life and you can be free from it." And, you know, he gave me a little bit of hope.
Oh, he was encouraging you?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
He was giving me some hope. And then he mentioned, like, "Do you believe in God?" And then I said, "Yes." So I knew that that was my sign that God was real and he heard me and he was listening to me and he was there. And so we went outside. He asked me if he could pray with me. I was like, "Yeah." So we went outside, we prayed. And from that moment, I left the industry. I didn't do any more shoots. It's just, it's really not worth the money. And I can tell you, the women that I work with also know that. That's why they're leaving the industry. And you know what? The women who are in it, who are saying they like it, it's because they're selling it. They have to say that.
Yeah, I listened to a podcast recently, and the person was in the industry, and she was saying that on social media, she can't be herself on social media because it's all part of the act, and people don't want to know your true emotions, yeah, when they're just trying to objectify.
You'll kill the kill the fantasy. And like, you know, a lot of times they do like behind the scenes video and they'll be like, "Hey, Chrissy, tell us what you love most about, you know, this shoot or whatever." And we just tell you what you want to hear because we're selling the fantasy.
There's a reason why they call them actors and actresses.
Yes.
Well, Chrissy, you are an example of a person that has gone through so much. You didn't have the connection that you should have, that you deserved to have, mm-mm, as a young, nope, child. And today you're married.
Yeah. I've been married for 6 years.
And that's amazing.
And I run a support group with women who've come out of the sex industry. And then I travel and share my story.
I speak for myself and all of our listeners when we say thanks for sitting down with us today and having this meaningful conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Consider Before Consuming is brought to you by Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug is a non-religious, non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts.